from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. This is your SDPB News Podcast. I'm Jackson Dirks in Sioux Falls. Today is day 14 of the 101st legislative session at the state's Capitol building in Pierre, South Dakota. Today we've got plenty of updates for you on soft drink bans on food stamps, a bill increasing penalties for disrupting church services meets some skepticism, tweaks to South Dakota's trust laws, a landowner's rights bill, and even more. It's Tuesday, February 3rd. Here are today's stories. Lawmakers inch closer to banning soft drinks for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, recipients. House Bill 1056 requires South Dakota's Department of Social Services to submit a waiver request to exclude soft drinks for the SNAP program. If that's approved, within 6 months, soft drinks that contain natural or artificial sweeteners would be banned. This excludes milk products, milk substitutes, and some approved juices. 18 other states have already approved similar waivers. Proponents of the bill argue such drinks offer no nutritional value and thus taxpayers shouldn't foot the bill. Representative Taylor Rehfeldt is the bill's prime sponsor.
The taxpayer-funded nutrition programs should promote actual nutrition. When public programs allow the purchase of high-perched sugar beverages, the largest single source of added sugar in the U.S. diet, we knowingly contribute to preventable disease in populations that are already at a higher risk. This bill is not about judgment. It is not about restricting food. It is about responsible stewardship of a nutrition program that supports millions of families. It's about aligning SNAP with what we already know improves health. Restricting sugar-sweetened beverages within a nutrition program is practical.
Rehfeldt says the bill would put SNAP in line with other programs like the Women, Infants, and Children program.
To make a nutrition program about nutrition. In every other nutrition program we administer, sugary drinks are excluded because they offer no nutritional value and are strongly associated with chronic disease. SNAP is the outlier.
However, others argue the decision should be made at the federal level because SNAP is a federal program that the state administers. Rehfeldt says if they wait, South Dakota will foot the bill.
We are the ones seeing Medicaid costs rise. We are the ones who will spend more on Medicaid than education this year. And we are the ones who can act now to reduce the preventable disease burden. There is nothing fiscally responsible about delaying action.
The governor's office spoke in opposition to the bill. Laura Ringling with the office says while they support SNAP reform, this approach is not the right path for South Dakota.
And here's why. Number one is the cost. So implementing a waiver like the one proposed would cost South Dakota nearly $500,000 annually. That's $500,000 every year that the waiver's in place. It would take 3 full-time employees and a third-party vendor contract for necessary evaluations.
She says because the Department of Social Services is already stretched thin in South Dakota, it would need the additional resources to support the proposed SNAP waiver. Ringling also pointed out the state can submit a waiver without the legislation, but HB 1056 requires it to be done now. In her rebuttal, Representative Rehfeldt pushed back on that claim.
I asked the Legislative Research Council for cost estimates, and they stated the cost would be $0 or minimal.
She argues the state could see cost savings through reduced diet-related diseases in SNAP recipients who are also on state-funded Medicaid. Others worry about how retailers and grocers would implement the change. Nathan Sanderson is the executive director of the South Dakota Retailers Association. He says his organization is concerned on how to implement the new rule affecting their businesses.
SNAP is everything under the sun except for some very specific carve-outs. And so what our businesses need to know is, what are the items that are carved out specifically? We can't say, retailers, you can't sell soft drinks and SNAP, because you don't want to have a cashier make that judgment call at the time. They need to know in their systems which very specific UPC codes are or not in.
Others maintain the discussion was philosophical. That includes RF Bowie, who says he's offering perspective from the boots on the ground as a grocer.
Let me start with a real person. Picture this. Single mom with 4 kids. 2 of them are infants. She's got 2 jobs. Still needs SNAP to survive. She's exhausted. She's doing the best she can. She picks up extra shifts so that her electricity is not shut off, so she doesn't lose her propane. However, the one vice she has is that she wants to start every day with a Diet Coke. I don't believe government should be in the business of making that choice for her. And when I tell that to people, most people who truly listen don't believe we should either.
He explains the challenge grocers have in implementing the bill.
The difference between WIC and this bill is WIC is what you can buy. This is what you can't. That's a huge differentiation when it comes to implementation. Far more complicated, far more expensive.
Bowie says those costs will be passed down to every grocery shopper in the state. Rehfeldt says implementation would be similar to WIC and responded to a shopper's right to choose.
Others talked about dignity and choice. The mom who wants to drink her Diet Coke to start the morning. I hear that. But dignity is not about pretending that a nutrition program should pay for products that have zero nutritional benefit, do not make people feel full, and directly contribute to diseases that, as a nurse and a nurse anesthetist, I care for every single week. True dignity is preventing suffering, not paying for the first gulp of a very big problem.
The bill advances to the House floor after an 11-2 vote in the House Human Health and Services Committee. The governor's proposal to increase penalties tied to disrupting a church service has passed its first legislative hurdle. However, opponents question if it's politics or a genuine problem for South Dakota houses of worship. SDPB CJ Keen has more.
While the governor's office and supporters say the bill is a response to current events in Minnesota, there's little to corroborate that anything similar is happening here. Tara Larson is a lobbyist for the State Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers and spoke in opposition.
We currently have a statute in place. It currently is a Class 1 misdemeanor, and I looked it up on e-courts, and I have yet to find an instance that this has ever been prosecuted under the current crime. Our opposition is merely the fact of why would you increase a penalty when the current penalty actually seems to be handling the situation.
However, for Senate Republican Majority Leader Jim Melhoff, who brought the bill to committee on behalf of the governor, that's missing the point.
I'm not necessarily looking here for deterrence. I'm looking here more for punishment.
Even Del Rapids Republican Senator Tom Pischke, who has been outspoken about the importance of faith in his life and politics, said his support is couched in doubt the bill would even be used.
I don't really think it's going to make one bit of difference, quite honestly. It's almost like we're just sending a political message here. And so I'm okay with supporting the bill, but I just don't think it's going to get used quite often.
The bill was ultimately passed without opposition from the Senate Judiciary Committee. Despite this, Pischke requested the item not be put on the consent calendar, meaning it will receive a full floor debate in the Senate. I'm SDPB's CJ Keen in Pierre.
South Dakota lawmakers advance a bill to study a Medicaid tool many say could improve healthcare access on the Native reservations located in South Dakota. The bill is a product of the State Tribal Relations Committee's work this interim. HB 1006 creates a task force studying the creation of Indian Medicaid managed care entities for South Dakota. A created Indian managed care entity could enter into a contract with the state of South Dakota to provide Medicaid services to all eligible Native Americans in the state. The legislative task force would study the possibility of such an entity in South Dakota. It passes out of the House floor on a 60-7 vote and heads next to the Senate side. South Dakotans susceptible to virtual currency kiosk fraud may be better protected under a proposal in the state legislature, proponents say. That includes the elderly. Representative Matt Roby is a co-sponsor of the bill. He shares the story of an individual he knows who experienced a fraud scare. He says an older resident came into his office last summer in a panicked state on a call with a scammer.
She had $10,000 in the passenger seat of her car, and she had an address on a piece of paper that was the address for one of the local gas stations that has one of these Bitcoin machines. And she was asking me what a digital wallet was. How do I find this thing? I need to put this money in there. All my stuff's going to be taken away. And so this gentleman was persistent. After we hung up on him, he called back four times. And so thankfully she had stopped me. If she hadn't stopped, she probably would have gone to the gas station and stuck $10,000 in this machine, and it would have disappeared. So
Senate Bill 98 aims to put consumer protection guardrails around cryptocurrency kiosks, treating them similar to ATMs. The bill is expected to be amended to appease some industry concerns, like a fee cap. The Senate Commerce and Energy Committee did not take action on the bill at its Tuesday hearing. A bill tweaking trust laws in the state advances out of a Senate committee. South Dakota's trust industry has over $800 billion in assets as of 2024. Senate Bill 100 clarifies rules in South Dakota around trusts, conflict of interest provisions, and community property trusts. Proponents say some of the changes are in response to different issues from the Internal Revenue Service, and this dovetails state law into federal tax laws. It advances out of the Senate Commerce and Energy Committee unanimously and heads now to the state Senate. a bill that proponents say could one day save the lives of diabetic children in schools, advances out of committee. If passed, it allows diabetic students to carry and use their prescribed medication, such as insulin, on school properties. Currently, the state allows similar provisions for conditions like asthma. Students are required to keep a written statement from a physician or other health care provider on file to do so. The bill received unanimous support in the House Health and Human Services Committee and advances to the House floor. Lawmakers advance a bill they say strengthens landowners' rights and brings state law in line with the state Supreme Court decision. Senator Mark Lapke is Senate Bill 88's prime sponsor. He explains the specifics.
This bill is going to strike the invasive style tactic surveys as ruled by the court. It is going to still allow for surveying to take place in the form of a general walk-around inspection and minimal soil disturbances.
Some proponents are calling it the Bosley bill because it's in response to a situation involving Jared and Tara Bosley. A private company surveyed their property under current statute and allegedly caused damages to the Bosleys' cropland. Tara Bosley testified to the committee asking lawmakers to vote yes.
Your home is supposed to be your safe place, where you feel comfortable, safe, protected. But for my family, we no longer feel safe at home. After a private company invaded our home, shop, cattle yards, shelter belts, and fields against our wishes. The look on my kids' faces that awful day is one I will never forget. We had to sit back and helplessly watch as strangers entered our farm, our life's work, and did whatever they wanted despite our objections.
The bill advances to the Senate floor after unanimous vote in the Senate Commerce and Energy Committee. Lawmakers begin discussing tax exemption bills to support data centers in South Dakota. The House State Affairs Committee looks at HB 1005 tomorrow morning. The proposal offers a 50-year sales tax exemption for data center equipment. Supporters say the bill brings South Dakota in line with other neighboring states. Bill Even is the executive director of the Governor's Office of Economic Development. He says there are two sides to the debate. One's looking at a business opportunity and the other has no interest in having data centers in the state. He's hoping lawmakers will actively seek a compromise.
What I'm not seeing is the ability to get in the middle and talk to these hyperscalers and say, what other benefit can you provide to the state of South Dakota and what does that look like? So you end up with a yes-if conversation instead of a no-because conversation. And that's the part that we haven't gotten to yet. And I would hope that our legislature would get into that middle ground and say, okay, I've got concerns about this. If I get those addressed, what else is it? What gets you to a yes-if instead of a no-because?
A second bill up for consideration prohibits the state from offering any tax incentives on data centers. Senate Bill 135 has not been scheduled to be heard in committee. South Dakota's gun laws almost got even looser in the House Education Committee, though a pair of bills were killed before reaching the floor. SDPB CJ Keene reports.
The pair of bills would remove enhanced permits for concealed carry on college campuses and allow some employees to carry a concealed pistol inside schools. Republican Representative Dylan Jordan says his college campus bill is a matter of evening out laws for university students.
They can carry almost anywhere else in South Dakota legally already. Our young adults, especially our females on college campuses, should not have to pay close to hundreds of dollars and give their fingerprints to the FBI to practice their God-given right to defend themselves.
Nathan Lucas is the executive director of the State Board of Regents and spoke in opposition. He says South Dakota colleges are already gun-friendly.
If you introduce a firearm into a situation, it escalates things drastically. It changes the calculus for every person involved. Is it too much to require an individual carrying on our campuses to have a one-day training that just covers some of the foundational fundamental principles of firearm safety, firearm laws in South Dakota?
Both bills were killed in committee, much to the chagrin of Representative Jordan, as heard in the following interaction.
Chair, can I have a comment, follow-up,
since
the motion?
Absolutely, I'm sorry.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a pretty simple bill, and I didn't realize I was in Minnesota's education committee, so I would just like to say that I'm disappointed.
Point of order. Point of order.
State your point of order.
My point of order is decorum in this committee room.
Yes, I agree. That wasn't necessary. And so, Representative Jordan, I do agree with the point of order.
The bills failed with respective votes of 9-6 and 12-3. I'm SDPB's CJ Keene in Pierre.
A bill tightening state limits on groundwater withdrawals died on the House floor on Monday. House Bill 1103 would have prevented taking more water from aquifers in the Black Hills than can be recharged naturally each year. The prime sponsor of the bill was Representative Scott Odenbach. He says the bill addresses concerns that water demand in the Black Hills is outpacing supply. Opponents of the bill cited concerns about the cost of installing additional monitoring wells, impacts to water supplies, and increases to water rates. The bill was amended to go into effect in 2027, giving officials extra time to prepare for its implementation. The House of Representatives voted 46-16 against the bill.
Legislative coverage on SDPB is supported by the South Dakota Bar Foundation, SDN Communications, Missouri River Energy Services, and your membership in the Friends of SDPB. Thank you.
South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks is looking for public feedback on its elk management plan. A new proposal from the GFNP board would increase the upper end of elk population in the Black Hills to 9,000 when habitat allows. The current population objective is 6,000 to 8,000. The change would allow more elk hunting licenses to be drawn. Anyone interested in sharing their opinion can do so on the Game, Fish, and Parks website. Comments are due by February 17th. A longtime Black Hills winery that recently closed is finding new life as a museum. Prairie Berry Winery near Hill City closed at the end of 2024. Now the Black Hills Institute of Geological Research has bought the property. Institute officials say they're planning on converting it into a natural history museum. The goal is to open in summer of 2027. A newspaper article from 2007 began by saying every town should have a Sherry D. Schmidt. Unfortunately, there was only one, and the town of Centerville cherished her presence right up until she died this past July at the age of 94. For decades, she and her husband, Stan Schmidt, ran the local Rexall Drug, but it was Sherry's devotion to preserving Centerville history that cemented her legacy as Centerville's museum matriarch. SDPB's Tim Davidson spoke with community members about Sherry D. Schmidt's life and legacy.
You want to know about Sherry Schmidt, is that correct?
Where do I start? I get a little emotional talking about Sherry D.
Sherry was the life of the community, the heartbeat of the community.
She was involved in about everything.
School organizations, churches, fundraisers.
The garden club, the Rebecca's, all the different groups. And she was a businesswoman too.
You know, she was the town historian for years.
Somebody you could go to and know she didn't have the answer, she was going to find it for you.
She was the person that people went to. People came from out of state to talk to her.
She's got a memory that is unreal. I mean, unreal.
Her interest actually began in about 1958. She was working with her mom and a newspaper gentleman working on the 75th anniversary of Centerville. And she just loved going through the old newspapers, and her interest was piqued then. And her mother was writing that article in the newspapers. So Sherry also took that on after her mom passed.
Just a rich history of wanting to keep Centerville history alive. You know, her mother did it, and her husband and his father, you know, that was two generations of pharmacists for many, many years in Centerville. And I think that's where she kind of started her collection. You know, pharmacies back in the day, they weren't just your prescription drugs. They really supplied the town with everything.
Schmidt Rexall. She had Hallmark, all the traditional stuff. I would remember going in there as a little kid, first going down the penny candy aisle, and then going around and looking at all the beautiful gifts and the greeting cards, and just spending a lot of time there as my grandma worked there for, I think it was 44 or 45 years. And I think the first love of my retail experience and shopping and finding beautiful things came from Sherry D's collections.
Schmidt Drug was next door from here. The next building over was a little small building. It used to be a paint store. And Stan and Sherry bought that building. Now, the reason Sherry bought it was to get rid of all the stuff in her house.
A lot of the items from town were being sold on auction and sent to California and sold. And she goes, if this keeps going on, we won't have any record of our past. So she started collecting. I guess in the year 2000, they were planning for an all-school reunion. At that point in time, the building next door to the Schmidt Drug was empty. So Stan said, let's put our stuff over there. So they did. And they said it would be a great room for the folks to gather when they came back for the reunion. And they'd have all the annuals available and other memorabilia. So that's when the museum actually began over there to be an organized place. And it was amazing.
I would stop in and, try to learn about Centerville history myself. So I got to build a bond and a relationship with Sherry. And when she was getting ready to sell her building, felt we needed to keep that Centerville history alive and the items that she had collected over the years and just the history that she had documented on Centerville. We had been looking at another building on the same block to renovate and turn into a community space. And we were able to purchase that building, and somehow Sherry trusted me to kind of take those museum items, bring her along and bring her into this new space to keep that history alive.
You can touch the old telephones. You can open up books and things. Sherry felt very strongly that that's what a museum was for.
I don't think she ever thought about taking credit for anything, because she always thought there was more than just her. She thought there was a group. Other towns, a lot of times this stuff is thrown away because there's no place to put it or can be seen.
She had a passion for Centerville, a deep love for it. She grew up here, and the families just meant so much to her. Sherry was an amazing woman, and right up to the day she died, her mind was as sharp as a tack, very clear, and she wanted to keep sharing information.
This conversation was on Dakota Life Greetings from Centerville. It featured former Schmidt Rexel employee Deb Dirks, longtime museum volunteer Donald Smith, fellow Centerville retailer Kristen Cunningham, and Economic Development Director Jared Hybertson. And that's your daily news update. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, X, and YouTube at SDPB News, and visit sdpb.org/news to stay up to date on our journalism as it comes in. As always, thanks for listening.